Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
When the big, big, big one strikes, a super earthquake of truly cinematic proportions, where will it hit? California or Japan? Well, it could be in the Pacific Northwest. The region sits along a major quake area called the Cascadia Subduction Zone. And when that big earthquake hits, Portland and Seattle could be devastated. Catherine Schultz reports about the possibility of a big one in the Northwest in a recent issue of The New Yorker, and she read an excerpt of her story to us.
In theory, those who are at home when it hits should be safest. It is easy and relatively inexpensive to seismically safeguard a private dwelling. But lulled into nonchalance by their seemingly benign environment, most people in the Pacific Northwest have not done so. That nonchalance will shatter instantly. So will everything made of glass. Anything indoors and unsecured will lurch across the floor or come crashing down. Bookshelves, lamps, computers, canisters of flour in the pantry. Refrigerators will walk out of kitchens, unplugging themselves and toppling over. Water heaters will fall and smash interior gas lines. Houses that are not bolted to their foundations will slide off. Or rather, they will stay put, obeying inertia, while the foundations, together with the rest of the Northwest, jolt westward. Unmoored on the undulating ground, the homes will begin to collapse.
Well, if I may say, I am a native Oregonian. I grew up in that seemingly benign environment. And that nonchalance Schultz writes about? Well, she shook me right out of it. Federal Emergency Management Agency officials told her that when the Cascadia earthquake and ensuing tsunami hit, 13,000 people could die. 27,000 might be injured. 1 million would be displaced. So I asked Catherine Schultz, I hoped, whether any part of this scenario could be an exaggeration.
I hope not. But what I will say about that is that all of these numbers are based on what FEMA and everybody else regards as the worst case scenario, meaning the entire subduction zone gives way at once. That happens. We know it's happened throughout history. We know that it will happen again. Now, there are smaller things that could happen along that subduction zone. We could get a kind of warning earthquake. Only the southern half of the zone could rupture. That's going to be very bad news for people in Northern California and Southern Oregon. But places like Portland and Seattle and Vancouver Island are going to be spared. So, yes, there are scenarios that will be less catastrophic. The one that I describe here, it's not an exaggeration, but it is a question of when. And earthquakes are unpredictable. We have statistics and we can make inferences from them, but we cannot at all say when this particular scenario will strike.
Right. I mean, I want to talk with you about that in just a second. But you have actually quoted people who know the possibilities better than anyone. I mean, you talked to FEMA regional director Kenneth Murphy, who said that their operating assumption is that everything west of Interstate 5 would be toast. I mean,
you know, I want to say something about that quote because it's gotten a lot of attention. On the one hand, great, right? We are talking about a very major catastrophe. If anything, those FEMA figures could be understatements. If they're based on a February earthquake, if it happens in the summer, we could actually see much worse casualties. But this idea that everything will be toast, look, even 13,000 casual deaths, it's a horrifying number, but it's a small fraction of the population of the region. And I think it's important to remember, look, this is actually survivable and going to be survived by most people. There are steps you can take. What you don't want is the kind of sort of fatalism of, well, you know, there's nothing we can do about this. I think by saying the region is going to be toast, part of what he's getting at is that is actually the fallibility of the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be such widespread collapse of roads. When you think about it, there's not that many roads over the mountain passes. You take one out and suddenly you can't access these. You know, there's damage, but you can't get in there to help people. So part of the real problem is it's not that every structure is going to collapse and every person is going to be underneath it. It's that we have a huge logistical problem of even providing aid, rescue. How do you get people out of there? How do you get water and supplies in? It's going to be it's going to be fractured like a, you know, a rock thrown at safety glass. That's yeah. the kind of real heart of the problem.
Well, let's take a step back here for a second, because for people who don't know the geology of the Pacific Northwest, I mean, there is something rather unique going on there. Can you walk us through it a little bit?
Sure. You know, I imagine that most listeners will be familiar with the Ring of Fire, this region of the Pacific that is very volcanically and seismically active. And what's going on throughout there is what's going on in the Northwest. There's essentially sort of this invisible kind of battle of forces going on between two massive tectonic plates. And two of them are basically stuck against each other here in the Northwest, or more precisely one of them, the North American plate, which is the one we're all sitting on top of right now. It's gotten stuck against the oceanic plate, the Juan de Fuca plate. And so the oceanic plate is basically pushing North America eastward in this region. It's just crumpling it like a kind of hand holding a spring against a wall. Well, at some point, that spring is going to have gotten as compressed as it can, and it's going to give way. And when it does, it's going to spring back the way a spring does. And that's the earthquake, basically. So the entire Northwest region, sooner or later, let's hope later, is going to rebound, essentially. It's going to rebound westward. It's going to drop. And that's going to produce the earthquake and the kind of cataclysmic damage we're talking about in this piece.
Now, have earthquakes of significant size that might give us a hint as to what the really big one would be like? Have they been felt in the Northwest in recorded history?
No, they haven't, and that's part of the real problem here. One reason that we remain so oblivious to this risk for so long is that the Pacific Northwest is actually a very young place in terms of the kind of, you know, white American history, recorded history, as you're saying. We know exactly when the last earthquake happened in this region. It happened on January 26th, 1700. And of course, the region was populated then. There were a lot of Native American communities living here. They retained the memory of this earthquake. There are a lot of accounts of what happened when that earthquake and tsunami struck. But really, we started tracking the history of this region 115 years after that earthquake hit. So there was no real sense as we were developing the Pacific Northwest, building this infrastructure, settling these cities, that there was any kind of significant seismic risk at all.
Right. And so this gets to what you were saying earlier, which is it's the infrastructure that's incredibly vulnerable there. But, you know, in defense of my fellow Northwesterners, I mean, I look back at the paragraph that we asked you to read, and you sort of tongue-in-cheek said the nonchalance of the Northwest, of their seemingly benign environment. But can you blame people? I mean, it's not like California or Japan that's had regular reminders of the fragility of the crust of the earth beneath their feet. That just hasn't happened in Oregon or Washington.
That's exactly right. I mean, I'll tell you, one of the most sobering moments I had in reporting this story, and one that I really regret not managing to squeeze into the piece, I was speaking with Carmen Merlo, who's the director of emergency management for the city of Portland. And she's been in that role, I think, for a decade. Prior to that, she spent 7 years in another emergency management capacity for the state of Oregon. And I asked her, okay, so in those 17 years, what's the worst natural disaster that you've coped with? And she mentioned these major snowstorms that had hit, I don't know, sometime in the 21st century, so in the last 15 years. And I said, oh, okay, so, you know, how much snow are we talking about? And she said, I don't know, 10, 11 inches. So that's our baseline, right? This is part of the problem with the Northwest. It's amazingly benign. You know, there's not a precedent for a huge natural catastrophe. There's not that kind of daily awareness. And it matters. You know, people who live in San Francisco, live in L.A., they know that they're living with seismic risk. And people here really don't.
Right. I mean, they know how to fight fires, I have to say.
They know how to fight fires. And they might, in fairness, they might know intellectually that they're living with seismic risk, but it's so abstract, right? It seems like, well, this thing hasn't hit in 315 years. It's not in anybody's living memory. And so there's a real gap between knowledge and the kind of felt urgency that actually makes people take action.
Right. And I mean, the people that you talk to, is there a push in Oregon and Washington for some kind of better early warning system? Or any kind of warning system at all?
You know, there's a push for seismic safety, broadly speaking, I think. There are a lot of people who are really, really committed, really trying hard on this issue. Honestly, these days, I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there who think we can do this with iPhones. This is actually not a complicated, expensive technology. We should be able to implement this. I think in some ways the larger questions are, what are we going to do about the 3,000-odd brick schools in the region? What are we going to do about hospitals in the inundation zone? You know, these are real and difficult policy questions. And, you know, as I said, there are a lot of very committed people working really, really hard to make the region safer. It is a matter of money, as you pointed out. Is it expensive? Sure, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than fixing it after it breaks.
Mm. You're there in Portland right now. Beautiful city, City of Roses. Do you ever, I don't know, do you ever walk along the Columbia there and and look at all the bridges and just want to, like, shake an alarm bell and say, this could all come crashing down. We need to do something now.
Sure. I mean, I think this piece was my alarm bell. You know, like you, I didn't grow up here, but I've spent a lot of time in the region. I have family here. I have very dear friends here. And I am really concerned about it. None of us know when this is going to happen, but we know that it's going to happen. And, you know, and we know that there actually is a lot that we could do to make it much, much safer. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I bikes to the studio over the Broadway Bridge, and do I have a moment in the middle of it when I think, oh man, you know, sure, of course. And I do think that there is a gap between the awareness and the willingness to act on it, and that does it that needs to shift.
Yeah. Well, from Mount Rainier in Washington to Mount Hood and all the way down through the remainder of the Pacific Northwest, I guess we all thank you for sounding that alarm bell so eloquently in this piece.
Well, you're very welcome, and I thank you for having me on the air to sound it further.
Catherine Schultz writes for The New Yorker. Her latest piece is called The Really Big One, and we've got a link to it at our website, hereandnow.org. Catherine, thanks again.
Thank you so much.